Hello everyone, Nexa here, and today I am joined with Greytone and Grisham.
Hello.
Hello everyone.
And for today's podcast, we're going to be diving in and discussing making memorable antagonists. I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Grisham, Trial by Fire, and let him lead this discussion.
So, I was speaking with a friend of mine a few years back, and we were talking about movies initially. And we were saying that it does not matter how awesome the heroes are if the antagonist is weak. And so, when it comes to storytelling, especially gaming, be it D&D, Pathfinder, or any of the other awesome RPGs out there, the same holds true. If your heroes are awesome and they are well built and you manifest them correctly and your characters are vibrant, that all becomes pale if the antagonist is weak. And so it behooves us as GMs to find a way to make those antagonists strong and memorable for those players so their accomplishments mean something. With that in mind, I want to ask a question to you, Greytone. What do you think is one of the key elements in crafting antagonists that will be remembered?
Okay, I think one of the key things you have to focus on when I look to make a memorable villain is you really need, it needs to be a challenge for the heroes. The players have to be challenged by the person. But I think one of the biggest things is the motivation for why the character is doing what they do. I think some of the weaker ones are just like they're bad because they want to do bad things. And they need to have a motivation. Like, why are they doing what they do? You know, what's the story? What led them on this path to go to such great lengths that the players now have to stop this individual from attempting whatever they may be trying to do, whether it be take over the world, take over a city, unleash a plague, whatever the motivation may be, achieve ultimate power. They do need to have a good motivation for that. That needs to, you don't want to give it away right away, but when they get along the storyline, that element becomes revealed and the players start to see that, hey, this person has a background too. You know, we're doing it because a lot of players are doing what they do many times just because that's the adventure. There's a dragon up in that valley. We need to go stop it. You know, well, why? You know, it's just, the dragon's not doing anything to us, but hey, we're players. We're going to do this. It's powered by plot. But the villain needs a, why is the dragon there? You know, why did it settle in that valley? What's it after? To really make it memorable, it needs to have a motivation, I think.
I'm with you 100%. I do agree with that. sorry, one moment.
Infamous phone call during the podcast. Uh-oh. Yeah, so Nex is going to be honest for that one.
I'm sorry, but, guys. 1 minute.
Oh, no worries.
And it will not be edited out.
We don't.
This is live. Well, is live while, yeah, we're so recording it.
Where we're going. Hopefully, nothing like a siren comes up because I'm actually sitting. It's a beautiful 83-degree day here in Chicago. So I'm sitting here in my kitchen, looking out my wonderful window. So apologies if the siren comes by. But
great, Tom. As he's handling his phone call, one of the things that I think about with making a memorable antagonist is that in order to be memorable, the antagonist has to be in the background doing things that the players are aware of them and not necessarily killed. Because let's just be honest, a lot of players like to kill the bad guys so that they don't become memorable antagonists.
Exactly. Very true. A game I'm running right now, a homebrew campaign, I had two sets of bad guys, or big bads. There was the group that was set up. It was basically a cult of Bashaba worshippers, the goddess of misfortune. And each of them were a particular type of creature that had something bad happen to them. There was a drider, a medusa, a jackalware, and a minotaur. All these are kind of cursed. They've had bad things happen to them to become the creatures that they are. And they were set up as kind of what the players thought were the big bads. These are the antagonists that we're supposed to defeat. Not realizing they were just the first line. That was the forward group that's out there actively in the environment that the players see. Meanwhile, the big bad, the real villains, the real antagonists were behind the scenes, watching the players, assessing what they're doing. Their plans were moving forward. The players knew about these plans, but didn't know who they were. And these were antagonists they specifically did not want to have killed off. Now, part of that is, yeah, you're absolutely right, Nexa. A lot of times players are going to be like, okay, we're gonna chase them down. We're going to run them down. And I'm going to take them out. These guys are not going to come back and haunt us. But yeah, if they're not very memorable, if that ends, you know, Darth Vader died at the end of Star Wars. You know, you lose a whole, you lose this great story. So he has to survive. Now, yeah, you could say powered by plot, you know, and just it's. But what would have stopped them from saying, well, there's this one TIE fighter left out there. Let's all gang up on it. You know, it's already damaged. So, you know, a lot of players be like, hey, we're going to mop this up. We're not just going to leave. So I had to write in particular plot points. If the antagonists were able to fight the players who stand still and have an orderly retreat, which would ultimately have been the goal of this storyline, or if it didn't go my way and one or more of the villains died, how would they come back? And so there was a plan for that. So I think it's writing and planning ahead of time to make sure that villain has an escape route. And it's not necessarily everyone fighting to the death. You know, there's nothing wrong with running away sometimes, falling back, hey, you know, live to fight another day. But you're absolutely right. You don't want to have one-shot villains, or even at the end of the campaign necessarily, where that person's going to die. Maybe they come back in another chapter of that game, depending how you structure your campaign. You know, at some point, if the storyline involves the players overcoming this antagonist and defeating them, which I did. One of my favorite antagonists was a necromancer, Kavala Voss, one of the coolest names I think I'd come up with for a villain. He was in the background. The players really had no direct connection to him. They didn't know he knew somebody was out there. They didn't know who he was. So when he had his big reveal, it was at the end, and it was basically a fight to the death. You know, I was that particular character, this was going to be where it was going to go, but it was going to set up a lot of other plot lines that were going to come back later on. But, you know, he was a villain that was going to be the center of that particular chapter, but I was like, you know, he's not going to be the ultimate one that's going to come along down the lines. These last batch of villains, I had a different plan for them. And yes, they are going to come back, and they were able to escape the players, kind of fought into a draw, and then they kind of worked out a mutually agreeable retreat. so it's just
now. Yeah, so I realize we say the term antagonist, but do you feel like all the antagonists have it out to kill the player, or just, you know, cause them minor discomfort?
Nexus, I'm so glad you brought up that point. And I do wish to address the statement that you just made, but I wanted to point out the as we were discussing things to discuss today, I originally had come up with the idea of how to make memorable villains. And Greatome had suggested how to I just said how to build memorable villains, and Greatome had suggested on how to make a good antagonist. And upon looking at those two topics, I realized that antagonist is a much more profound thing to discuss, because an antagonist is not necessarily a villain. An antagonist might be someone who is working alongside you through a portion of the campaign, and then it turns that their ultimate goals and your goals diverge. It doesn't necessarily mean that this person is bad. It's just that their goals are different than yours. And that was why I liked the first part of Greatome's first answer so much. because it's not necessarily that this person is a villain, and you have they have to have motivations, they have to have reasons for them doing things. This person can be just as noble as your character, as your characters, but if the ultimate goal for them or the society that they work for or the agency that empowers them is different than yours, you could come into conflict, and thus they become, he who was an ally is now an antagonist, but is not necessarily a villain. And that makes for much more dynamic storytelling oftentimes.
And their goal doesn't necessarily need to even be to kill you. I think I brought up a little bit about Kavala Voss, our end baddie at that campaign. He was evil. You know, he wanted to achieve lichdom, and he's not a good person, but he wasn't necessarily out to kill the players. He was after the players because the players had something he wanted. If they didn't have what he needed, he wouldn't really have cared about them. He would have gone along on his plot doing his whole thing. It was just that they're in possession of a book, which, by the way, don't ever put a book in holy wraps and say that that damages undead, because that will be used as a bludgeoning weapon. So DMs out there, if you haven't done that before, be careful what you give your players. But he was kind of, he filled this story segment, and his goal wasn't really for me to provide this long-term bad guy. This was a story I really wanted to tell. And it really was something that kind of, his role as the antagonist was, we are going to start in a dungeon. It's Dungeons and Dragons. We're going to start this campaign in a dungeon at level one, which he did. And they were wrapped up at like level nine fighting a dragon. This was the way I wanted to do it. I want to get back to the heart of things. And so he was a villain that was providing the he had a lot of motivations. He was manipulating people around him to achieve his goals, but out to kill the players, not necessarily. He wouldn't have gone out of his way to go after the player characters. If they would have just abandoned this quest and said, here's this book, we're done, he wouldn't have gone after them. He was operating above that. So, but no, I don't think your antagonist necessarily has to be out to kill the players. Your goals can be opposed to one another, that could lead to conflict. Conflict can take several different forms, and like Grisham said, it's just it's not necessarily going to mean that they're evil per se. They're just motivated, and they have a goal different than yours. And maybe the players, it's questionable who's right or wrong. I sometimes don't get as in depth into the moral aspect of it. You know, you can tell some really good stories delving into those
I was just gonna say that's the crux of it. How do we make them memorable?
So
what do we do to make the antagonist memorable? I have my own story to share, but I want to get you to opinion.
So I wish to address something that Tony was just saying, and I actually wish to push forth with your statement. Tony had created another antagonist in this same campaign that he hasn't even addressed. And it may not be memorable for him, but it was very memorable for me as one of the players. So the individual that I'm speaking of was actually not the lich or the dragon that was fought in the campaign, but he was an elven noble who, as said party is moving through the elvish lands, finds out that the party is caring to destroy this evil artifact. He had no beef with the party. He had no animosity towards the party. He just felt that this party of relatively inexperienced individuals were not competent enough to perform the task of this importance, transporting and destroying this artifact. This was not an evil person. This person did not wish any harm upon the player characters at all. He wished for this evil artifact to be destroyed, which is what the same that the players did, but he thought this powerful evil object in the hands of individuals that were at this point in time, fifth level, sixth level, was just asking for doom and destruction of his people. And so an individual who could have been an ally, who And like, and because he had commands over this area, he was a fully fleshed out being who wanted the good. And he was memorable, not because he was against us, not because he stood against us, but because he actually desired the same things that we wanted. And he made all the, he made the players question whether or not they were competent enough to do this, to do this task, because he had much more experience. He had much more powers to call on his side. His argument was very valid and very memorable. But as things unwound, while there was the there was actually a test and a trial to see it, or there was supposed to be a test and a trial to see how this would be handled, that was the first time the big bad showed up, and the question became moot because the big bad showed up in his house in order to take the very thing that the lowly individuals were carrying. That if the lowly individuals had been allowed to stay on the move, he might not have tracked it down. And regardless, the threat that he was trying to prevent, he actually caused to manifest by making us stay in one place. And so he was a really memorable antagonist who was not a villain at all, because he was crafted with a good set of motivations, a willingness to actually assist the party if they were worthy, but questioned the worthiness of the players. I think that he's the perfect example of a well-crafted antagonist, because he had his own plot, his own motivations. And the question is, as Ed said, how do you create more characters as a GM of this caliber to test the players and to help them achieve more? And I think that that the first part is would have to be making characters or making antagonists that are fully fleshed out, that have their own motivations, and have something that they're working towards as well.
Well, that's a huge compliment, Grisham, because it's a, and I really, with all the other characters in that campaign, I hadn't thought of the arch druid that was brought in. It's one of the first really high level players you all met, and they're really looking down on the players in terms of, you're nowhere near powerful enough to deal with this. You know, you need to trust this with us. One, they were elves. You're traveling through elven lands. You are a half elf. There's a tiefling, a human at the time, a dwarf, a dragonborn. You know, they're like, hey, this hodgepodge group, we're not going to trust them. So it's just, I'm glad to hear that, because it's, and I think it does come into, it's a lot of writing. It's really sitting down and working through how are these characters going to interact with the world around them. That's what led to that whole encounter. And it was kind of meant, to a certain extent, it was, okay, I'm going to drop a big villain, which was an actual lich. The players who are nowhere near strong enough to take a lich on head on are going to be backed up by several high-level NPCs that will be on their side, and they kind of get caught in the middle of this. But it was really sitting down and riding through, because this campaign really took a different direction. And I think when you're working on memorable antagonists, you need to remember you're going to need to be flexible. The story is going to change. It's a living, breathing thing, because I can write something out and say, okay, we're going to go X, Y to point one, to point two, three, ABC in line. I got this thing. You script it out, which Grisham has a phenomenal story where a DM was trying to script an adventure. And they're like, this isn't even really Dungeons and Dragons. It's just, you know, we're just players in someone else's game that they're controlling. So you have to be flexible. And that means the villain's motivations are going to have to change, which I had to do in that campaign. You know, because the way they chose things, I had to look at it and say, well, okay, my original idea isn't quite going to fit, but I want to make this memorable. Now, they don't know these changes are going on. And it's the thing is, the DM, you don't have to be rigidly set in this concept that you have at the beginning. You can kind of be dynamic with it and change the world to make for a good story. I think that it's a lot of just prep work, just thinking about what are you trying to, story you're trying to tell, what characters populate this world, and how are they going to react with either the player character showing up or the antagonist showing up? What's going to happen? How's that dynamic going to go? And explain why. A good friend of mine, when he was talking about writing, he said, you know, your main character in your story had a regular routine that they had every day. He's like, why did they leave that comfortable routine to go on this adventure? He said, you have to start with that motivation. What event happens that turns the world upside down and sends them off on this new path that is not the normal routine? And he said, you've got to work out what their regular day is like, and then how does that change and why does it change? And so I look at what these antagonists are, these NPCs, what's their regular day look like, and then how is the players, how is that impacted by the players showing up with this quest? And I try to write a world where it's dynamic and it's their appearance alters things. And I think that's part of it. Like, how does it all fit together? Which is what's going to make someone memorable versus someone that's, okay, that was a cool fight. Which gets another thing. It can't just all be about combat stats. You know, right. It's got to be more about what the villain's looking to do.
Well, I think you said one of the best things you said was that you have to be flexible and fluid, as most worlds are living type things, as anything can change. So my example of a memorable antagonist, I actually did map out how I wanted to handle this particular antagonist, but it actually worked out better than I could ever imagine. So my players actually were fighting a group of bad guys. And when the bad guys were going to lose, I was going to have the bad guys scatter. And so half of the bad guys, if they managed to escape, they were going to kill the players. They were going to come back and just do everything they could to kill the players down the line. They were going to get stronger and stronger and kill them. The other half were going to just say, you know, beg for mercy. Don't kill me. Don't kill me. Don't kill me. And just was going to try to turn over a new leaf. So I wanted to make it a nice mixture. So here goes my favorite memorable antagonist, Runty the Cobalt.
The bane of a great tome's existence. So.
Runty the Cobalt was a little cobalt who actually was forced to fight and was overcome by the power of the players. And so what does he do? He gives up and says, do not kill me. Please let me stand trial. Players take him back to their town. He stands trial. And sure enough, Grey Tome actually speaks at his trial, offering him another opportunity to live life as a good person. And so Grey Tome even goes a step further and allows him to work at his stables. So while Grey Tome was away adventuring, his uncle was handling the stables, and Runty actually became somewhat of a horse whisperer. So he would actually take such good care of the horses that people were lining up, and the Grey Tome family business was really flourishing. So Runty saw his place in his new tribe in the village as running the stables. So he decided he was just going to outright buy the stables off of the Grey Tome. The uncle tried to argue. So Runty said, well, either you let me take it, or I'm just going to go somewhere else, because other people wanted to come specifically for Runty. So sure enough, when Grey Tome returns back from his adventuring, he finds out that Runty actually owns his stables. Runty then proceeds to say, well, I'll just outright buy you. To which Grey Tome gets upset and wants to make sure that his family name remains the name of the stables. And Runty says, no, it's my stables, and I'll pay you a stipend until I pay you off, which led to further arguments. And as the story goes on, Runty is actually a very productive member of the town and actually rivaling the head boss lady, which happens to be Holly, because Runty is just really moving and shaking in the town. And I think that's a memorable antagonist, because everybody knows the story of Runty.
Yes, 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 we do.
Yeah, I suppose he will remember. I'm not too sure. So, hey, Stevie, why don't you talk more about that awesome arch druid again? So, because I think our listeners are much more interested. I do have to give kudos to Nexa for that one, because that was, and yes, first off, I wanted to say some mistakes were made with Grey Tome kind of getting his pride tweaked more than anything when he came back. But that was definitely that was a shock, because he didn't really expect that. And a lot of the other players were like, well, do you really want to have a character who runs stables all day? You know, it's like, thought we're going to be adventurers. And it's like, well, you know, you put it that way. So it's, but yes, he was a very memorable character, because he came up and we all talked. I mean, Grey Tome, yeah, very much stood up and said, hey, he's not like other kobolds. You know, other player members in the party were like, nope, we should kill him. It's a kobold. Kobolds are kobolds. And he's like, no, he wants to be productive. And he gave him the job in his stable so he could become a proper member of the town and kind of under his protection, because it's like he works for Grey Tome and you can't cross him. It's like he's one of us. And to see him come back and kind of rise up. So it's just, and he is becoming a stronger figurehead in the city, you know, so it's just, or in the town, I should say. So it was, yes, it was, now I can look back and laugh, you know, but it's a very interesting character that hadn't really expected that of a kobold. You think of like, oh, they're kobolds. It's, you know, it's a, what is that? A 1/8, 1/4 CR creature, you know, it's worth like 25-50 XP, you know, here it's actually, you know, a character that's rose to some prominence and is actually, the way Nexus structured that adventure, we created new characters and they've received assignments from Runty, who needs favors done. So he's hiring the players to do these different tasks and things like that. So definitely a well-rounded creature who's not evil. It's not evil. Not even really opposed to the players. It's just more competition to them, I guess I would say. It's, you know, he has his own motivations. But not necessarily an opponent. He's just a really well done character who's got his own goals, and those don't always line up exactly with the players. So, excellent antagonist. So,
and another reason why I like the imagery of Runty. I've heard this tale of Runty, and I have had the fortune of playing in a campaign where the idea of Runty is a living, breathing soul. I have not yet met him, but I have heard of Runty. Another reason why I like Runty as antagonist is the fact that this is an individual who very well could have been literally one swing of a party member's blade and the character was gone. But instead, this individual presented himself like, look, I want to do more. I want to be better. And in being good actually caused members of the party more tribulation than he would as a quote unquote villain. By becoming a better person, he actually caused a Grey Tome more animosity, more conflict than he would have as a kobold and a villain that you would have fought off with one cantrip. And so that there's depth to the character that brings more to the campaign and thus more to your entire game world. And I think that it does once again fall back on the idea that here's a character concept that is fleshed out. This is an individual who becomes an individual, not just another stat block. In a campaign that I ran in the past, I structured it very much so that it would strike a lot of chords of familiarity, so that it would lead the players to begin to believe something about an individual So they would have these preconceptions only to shatter them for the players. I had a campaign where there was the Great Wall that was separating the good people in the South from the horde of orcs in the North, and that every now and then the Great Lord would form up all the different bands of orcs, and they would try to come south, but they always got smashed on the wall. And of course, you know, this was when the Game of Thrones television show was at its peak. So the players were a group of players who had gone north, who had heard about another ongoings in the north. So they decided to go north to investigate, and they ended up encountering this horde of orcs. And at this point in time, because the players were investigating a mutual threat, they when they encountered the horde of orcs, they thought that the orcs were just going to wipe them out. The orcs did fight them initially until the players were captured. And the players were taken back as prisoners. And then they got a chance to hear the histories from the orcs' point of view. As far as the orcs were concerned, the orcs were from the Southlands. And at some point in time, the elves had massacred most of the orcs and sent them running out of the south, out of their home. Then the elves built this humongous wall preventing the orcs from getting back to their homes. And the orcs had spent hundreds of generations trying to find a leader that was strong enough to take them back south so they could go home. And so, like, the players had never heard the orcs' side of the story, because for generations, they had only heard the side of the story that they had been hearing. They never even contemplated that the orcs' point of view was different than what they thought. The orcs were just raiding south to take over the rich lands to the south, when what the orcs really wanted to do was to go back to their ancestral homelands. And you could have just as easily had made a campaign about a group of individuals who had their ancestors decimated and the remaining of their civilization had been pushed to the hostile north and had simply wanted for generations to go back south to their homeland. So this potential enemy has now become much more complex. And now when the ultimate conflict, when the horde does eventually come south, there's no longer this simple dynamic of kill the orcs, they're coming south. It's for the players, they know, yes, we need to defend our homeland, because 5 million orcs rushing into our homeland will destroy our way of life. That is absolutely utterly true, but you can't just write them off as these evil individuals coming from the north, because that's not what they are. They're individuals who've been pushed out of their homes, who just want to go back to it. It adds complexity. It adds, and it gives the antagonist purpose, and it makes things mean more to the players, because they now know that their action has weight. It's not just I swing my weapon, I defeat an enemy. It's I swing my weapon to defend my purpose, knowing that while I do this, the person who's attacking me has just as much of a purpose as I do. It adds weight, as far as I'm concerned. That's a GM.
That's a very good point.
It is, definitely.
What was that, Grito?
Oh, no, I'm just agreeing with Grissom on that. So I think building on that, too, it's a lot of it's about the writing, the motivation. I think you can't really dispute the action, depending on, it's not only going to be necessarily be combat-related action, but there needs to be some sort of tension or encounter, probably a better word to use, with a memorable antagonist. There needs to be some sort of setup where it's not necessarily going to be something where they're fighting the person, you know, like Lex Luthor versus Superman. You know, Lex Luthor can't one-on-one necessarily fight Superman. He has to find other ways around Superman's strength. I think good antagonists A lot of them, yeah, there'll be a challenge for the players that could turn into combat, which is what I recently did with a batch of them where they were an equal match. And a lot of work, a lot of time went into this. And they're also, these were very unique antagonists. None of them were just coming out of the monster manual. I had to kind of dig through different things that I liked and different types of creatures and different villains and wrap my head around these concepts and their motivations and then build these characters that could take on the players in an even fight and be a challenge to them. Yeah, you can always overpower them and just have them be, oh, you know what, I can walk all over all of you because I'm much more powerful. But it's a little trickier to find that balance where it's a challenge. They're on an even playing level, and I think that's going to make it more memorable, where it's like we need to think about how we're going to address this encounter, not just, okay, I'm going to draw swords and roll initiative. I'm just going to power my way through it. In fact, I think they kind of made a snide remark to the players that you're a good team, but you're more of a blunt weapon. You just charge into whatever threat there is and just overpower it. But they had done things to kind of set up the environment so they had a little bit of an edge on the players, you know. But and they were kind of making little remarks to them that you know, it's because they'd been watching them, adding a little more of a personal jab in there as opposed to just straight combat. So I think you do want to put some thought into your villains. You know, what role they play. Not every villain is going to be necessarily this great memorable thing. Some of them are going to be plot points and plot devices where it's going to provide a challenge for the players, an encounter, a combat. People like that action. They like to get the toys out of the box and use them when they get into a fight. A lot of what 5e does is built around, and you can apply the writing and strategy side of it to any RPG, but, you know, 5e, a lot of the character design is what's going to happen in a fight. You know, certain a lot of those abilities do seem to be combat orientated or action orientated. So I think you need to put a lot of work into it. It is a lot of work, but it should be a labor of love. It should ultimately be fun. I enjoy it when the players, you know, hearing Grissom give a compliment to an archdruid I wrote up, because there was a lot of writing that went into that character. He was only in a few scenes in that particular chapter of a homebrew campaign, and then things were moving on. The story wasn't really going to involve that character ongoing, but it was a major encounter. It was a stepping stone. It was a logical progression of the story that you had to overcome this. But it's ultimately, it's a lot of fun to sit down and create these characters. It's a lot of time. I mean, I think the last four that I put together, it was a team of four. Margrave's Marauders is what I kind of called them myself when I was working on the team. But each one of them was created. The spellcaster, I did kind of take a little bit of a shortcut. I did use some specific stat blocks to flesh that out a little bit. But most of the characters were from the ground up, from the stats up, created specifically to act as a challenge to the players. And I was putting a lot of that time in there knowing that these weren't going to be one-shot people. They weren't going to be. The group beforehand, the Drider, the Medusa, the Jackalware, the Minotaur, I modified existing creature stats for them because they were going to be around for the length of that campaign. But they weren't going to be ongoing. They were kind of setting a certain purpose for me. These newer characters that came up with that were really behind the scenes, I wanted to give them a little more mileage. So I was working on, okay, how do I not have them all eliminated if this fight doesn't go well? But I was really happy with the way the storyline went. It was actually, they pulled out a couple things I hadn't thought of, which is going to happen, which is also going to make it memorable. When you take that character and put it out there and it's going to interact with your players, human beings, and you've got this concept that this antagonist has, and how is that going to work with these different personalities and different play styles? And that dynamic is going to be a big part of what's going to make it memorable.
I just want to add the one thing, because you kind of touched on it a lot, is bringing the players into the equation. One thing I would say is that as you listen to the players, and most times, at least for my players, a lot of them, they will talk amongst themselves, and you can hear something. Like, for example, let's just say that they're in an inn and they're talking to an innkeeper, and then they think the innkeeper is a killer. You know what I mean? Something that I probably had no clue or no thought of, but that makes things like, well, what if they're actually right? And so, you know, depending on how the players interact with certain characters, they can actually become memorable antagonists, because in the player's mind, you know, you could just like kind of cultivate that seed because they're thinking it. Don't give too much, but just a little bit, like, yeah, you think that innkeeper is shady, but you know, he hasn't done anything, but yeah, you're probably right. He is a little shady. And then slowly flesh out, because it's always in the back of their mind, but you haven't really further developed it yet. So I would recommend all DMs keep notes of their NPCs and what the player attitudes and perceptions are, because that's just a plethora of information that you can go back to and build upon, because the seeds are already there. You just Absolutely. Have to cultivate them and grow them.
I agree with you 100%. I had not manifested that thought as coherently as you had, but you're right. There are a lot of all those times those minor NPCs end up becoming more pivotal in the campaign, or even become reoccurring characters, because the players have dropped seeds and that you fertilize and you grow, and you realize that yes, this player's idea is actually the foundation for a much better idea than I had at the moment. And you realize that this is an opportunity to grow it. So I agree with you. And I think that is possibly the second foundational piece that we have found during this discussion. The first being, make sure that your main villains have their own motivations. Make them three-dimensional characters. But secondly, to actually listen to your players as much as they are listening to you. Because players oftentimes have these incredible ideas that may not have occurred to you yet, but you realize that in the course of the campaign, it builds something bigger and better than you originally thought. And that's part of world building. That's part of this hobby that we all enjoy. Because if you wanted to just simply write, and there's nothing wrong with writing, I enjoy writing, but if you wanted to just simply write a story, simply write a story. But part of role-playing is the interaction between the players and the GM as you build this world together. And they oftentimes have ideas that can pivotally change your story and your collaborative story and make something even better than you initially thought.
Yeah, but there's a big problem with that, because then you want to discuss that, but then say you want to talk about character concepts with one of your players in a podcast, and then that player's wife steps and says, no, you can't do that. You're going to give the DM too many ideas, when that was furthest from my mind. It's just like, hey, you know, talk a little bit more about that, Kristen. What was that idea that you had again? Let me see that. You know, so
I'm sorry, Grace Holm. My wife is still not going to let me discuss character idea concepts with you. Nice try, though.
I was going to try and slip that in there. So, no, you're right, because I got to listen to all of you. And I think Nexa definitely hits on the head. I keep a journal of every campaign I'm running, the notes through it, concept I have. Some of them don't necessarily get used. There are some I haven't used. I've fleshed out some villains and storylines, and it just didn't. It's an organic thing, and it just didn't work out. I put those and saved them. Perfect example is the asteroid that's about to strike the island the current group is on. That was a storyline I had an idea for years ago, but I'm like, well, how do I have a major natural disaster? How do I work that into a game where the players are not only facing some sort of villainous threat, an antagonist, but there's also this environmental challenge, you know? So it's just, you don't write these ideas down. You don't want to forget them. Shameless plug, I guess, would be the Wizards of the Coast world building journal. I've been doing that since 350 some odd writing prompts. And I've just been, as you know, going along every other day or so, just writing down a positive thing. And I think through what that little answer could be. So, but definitely keep track of notes during your campaign, because ideas are going to come up. Suggestions are going to come up. Like Nexus said with the bartender, it's you know, like, hey, how could that work somewhere else along the lines? What may be that motivation? So But I love keeping notes and then keeping track of characters, because there's a couple characters you run into and that maybe the players may not even realize they've done something, but maybe you write a note like, hey, this person survived this encounter. Maybe they're, that's changed them. Grissom and Nexa are in a game I'm running with them. And they actually, there was a great short story. That's on Evolving RPG, that little short story you wrote, Nexa. Didn't we read that on Evolving RPG?
Yes.
But the, yes, and it was a, yes. Yes. A prisoner they took. They spared his life. They said, you leave, we ever see you again, it won't, it will not end well for you. They let him go, and then next I wrote a little short story about what happens to that person later on down the line, and telling this, relaying that story. It was really cool. I was like, that's awesome. This little villain that was just basically there for an encounter, and
I believe the article is called the Devil and the Dagger.
It yes. was beautifully written. I enjoyed that yes. immensely.
Yeah, it was really well done. And it's just a small character that was only in for a scene, but grew into something really cool. It was a really cool concept. So encourage it. Again, a memorable antagonist because it was a small role. But the players, you got you and Grissom really kind of brought that character to life. You know, so it's cooperative storytelling. I think ultimately story really trumps all in this. Because if we're not having fun telling the story, why play? You know, why put all this time into it? You know, DMing's hard, you know, it's a lot of work, and you've got to manage everything. You're going to make mistakes, and you know, it's some concepts are going to work better than others. You might write something and think this is going to be so cool, it's going to be epic, and then it kind of falls flat. It doesn't really resonate. Don't take it personally. Just, you know what, that didn't work, what will? Well, let me go back into my toolbox of concepts, you know. Because not every, I think, antagonist that you want to be memorable is going to be. You know, there are going to be some villains that may just not resonate well, or it just doesn't work out well. The story just doesn't drive it well, or the players don't really jump into it, you know. So it's working with it. It's there is a little cooperative aspect to it, you know. I a lot of times ask the players, what do you want to do? Where do you see your character going? You know, so I can kind of build, I want to involve them in the storytelling process and building this adventure, because I want it to be as much fun for them as it is for me.
Exactly. And then we'll, yes. You know. I had forgotten about this character in question until Nexus was talking about how you need to listen to your players. But I had a throwaway NPC ultimately become the big bad in a game that I ran. I normally end up starting campaigns at much lower levels. But because of the way campaigns are, they rarely get a chance to run the full gambit of experience levels. And some people came to me, they were saying that they wanted to play a higher level campaign and they wanted to make non-good characters. And I had some trepidation about it because there's nothing wrong per se with people playing evil characters. The issue is that it's no longer a heroic story, and that can be fine if that's what your players are looking for, if that's what you're willing to delve into. And I decided, okay, it's something that we rarely do, so I'll let you all play these non-good characters. And I was letting them run at a much higher level starting than we normally did. And one of the players was a wizard. He was quite evil. And what he had decided to do was he was going to buy the loyalty of various individuals within town by, quote unquote, healing them. He would find the individuals who were lame or crippled, and he had taken skills in art, and he had the spell polymorph. So he would polymorph them into the exact same race that they were, looking exactly as they were, but he'd find a man who had his arm crushed, and he'd repair his arm and do things like this for individuals. And those individuals became exceptionally loyal to him. So he had this group of individuals that would do virtually anything for them because he had restored their lives to them. And upon occasion, some of these individuals were had been low-level adventurers. So they didn't have enough money to go to a priest for the heal spell or regeneration or something that would restore a limb. And so there's individuals who were on their way to power who suddenly found themselves destitute and had their lives restored to them. And so he had this little cabal of powerful minions, quote-unquote powerful minions. They're much more powerful than the standard citizen. And he found an individual who was a low-level priest who had been injured. And while he was not a evil priest, his deity was neutral. And when he didn't have the funds to pay for his own healing, they didn't heal him. And so he lost his faith. And so he brought this individual in, and this individual went from worshiping a neutral deity to practically worshiping this evil mage. And the more and more he was around this evil mage, he began to follow the world's god of corruption. And once he started journeying around with this evil mage, following the god of corruption, he became more and more powerful, and to the point where the evil mage is like, you know what? I don't exactly know what he's going to do next. I'm going to dispel magic on that spell that gave him his leg back and just push him back out. So the mage goes and he casts dispel magic on him. And the old priest laughs at him as his spell casts. And he goes, oh, the polymorph that you did on me last year? I got rid of that a long time ago. I don't have that leg anymore. And the mage realized, this individual that had become my minion has stepped beyond what I intended for him. And this individual just continued to grow more and more powerful until he became the big bad. And I ended up having this group of evil players defending the world from the god of corruption. And they're like, at the end of, they're like, we had all these evil intentions and you made us do good things. I'm like, I didn't make you do anything. This is the story that you all built. You all invented Quintus. You all invented the scenarios that led to his rise. You're in the individuals who gave him little items early on that helped him build his power until he went beyond your power base. And now, for your own selfish needs, you are doing the things that are good for the world. That wasn't my doing. That was the story that you built. And this was a character that my friends still talk about to this day. So they occasionally bring up Quintus, the avatar of the god of corruption. And it's because of things that the players did. And I realized, oh, wait a second. This character has life. This character has his own motivations. And so, yes, it's about listening to players, creating antagonists that are complete, that have their own set of motivations, and that makes them whole people, and that can then make for a good antagonist.
Very well said.
Definitely, definitely.
So now we're going to bring this podcast to an end. However, before we do so, I want to allow both Grey Tome and Grisham to have final thoughts.
Final thought. So I guess when you're really the brass tacks of a memorable antagonist is going to be not necessarily someone that's going to be a combat threat. It's going to involve a good story, a good explanation for why that person is doing, that creature is doing what it's doing. And have that connect some way potentially to your players or resonate with them so that it's not just, they're not just evil for evil's sake. Those are great motivations for low-level threats that don't require a lot of explanation. Maybe they're just filling in an encounter, but when you're looking at a great antagonist that's potentially a memorable one, is going to be someone that's going to have far-reaching impact on your story. Even though they may not be there in person, I think it's just really writing that background, the explanation for why they're doing what they're doing and how that relates to what the players are doing. So it's not all about just a lot of combat. It's going to be more of the story-driven role that that antagonist fills. So I think that's the key thing I think you want to look at when you're talking about memorable antagonists.
And in case anyone wondering what that clicking noise is, Grey Tone Cat Robin is clicking on his keyboard.
What is that? Shh, buddy, people can hear you.
Go ahead, Grisham, your final thoughts.
Everything that Grey Tone said is absolutely true. But also remember that every antagonist does not even have to be a villain. Sometimes the antagonist is the individual who has hired the players 15 times previously, but realizes that what the players' goals now are not the goals of the city that they've been serving. Or the archdruid who realizes these players may be good and decent folk, but they're just not powerful enough to carry out this charge and this artifact would be better off in the hands of someone more experienced. Neither one of these individuals are evil. Neither one of these individuals necessarily needs to lead to any combat whatsoever. But it is a point of conflict and gives the players a chance to think of ways to interact with the world that does not necessarily mean bringing forth their weapons or bringing out their most damaging spells. Sometimes the most influential interactions are actions that never lead to combat. Because what Grey Tome may not realize is that that individual questioning the party's worth is what set the tone for the character that I play in his game. Because my character had to question whether or not I was worthy to carry this artifact for its disposal. And once the gods had declared by the outcome of the event that, yes, you are worthy, it made my character realize that he had value, which was something that had always been at the core issue of the character that I created. So the combat situations are not necessarily what drives the character's motivations, but the interactions with the world definitely do.
Thank you, Grisham. Well said. I would just agree with what both of you all have said. And the only thing I will add is just what was actually said earlier is that continue to be flexible. I would just add, continue to watch for those little seedlings and slowly grow them. Because once they're in the back of players' minds, you know, they could grow and grow and grow. And it gives you a sense of like, yeah, I know this guy. Yeah, I remember when this guy did X, Y, and Z. So, yep, all of that. And with that, I would like to thank both Grey Tome and Grisham for this podcast. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us comments in the comment section below. And take care, everyone.